WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Memphis police released 4 graphic videos of the traffic stop and brutal beating that killed Tyree Nichols. 3 were from officers' body cameras, the other from a light pole.
Officers appear to kick, punch, and pepper spray the 29-year-old black motorist Nichols heard repeatedly screaming for his mom. The 5 officers involved, who are all black, have been fired and face charges including second-degree murder, assault, and kidnapping. President Biden says he is outraged and deeply pained by the footage. Kristen Goodwin, Fox News.
Those 5 now former officers out on bond this morning. About 75 people gather at Lafayette Square last night condemning the deadly act of police brutality.
Many were holding large signs. One read, "Justice for Tyree Nichols, jail killer cops."
We demanded that the police be defunded. I don't know about y'all, but when I messed up as a kid, I had my toys taken away. And somehow, when these people mess up, what do they get? Billions of dollars! Billions of dollars!
Kevin Lewis, 7 News.
Montgomery County parents will meet today for a community forum on fentanyl and life-saving Narcan training. It comes weeks after a 15-year-old from Montgomery County died from an overdose. County Executive Mark Elrich.
The use of fentanyl and pills in the younger age of those misusing drugs is very concerning. Last year, youth overdoses in Montgomery County alone increased by 78%. Non-fatal overdoses in youth went from 22 in 2021 to 37 in 2022.
11 people died last year compared to 5 young people in 11 people died this year compared to 5 in 2021. The forum runs from 9:30 to 11:30 this morning at Clarksburg High School. Former President Trump kicks off his 2024 presidential campaigning today with visits to a pair of early voting states. He'll be the keynote speaker at the New Hampshire GOP's annual meeting before traveling to Columbia, South Carolina to unveil his leadership team at the State House. The states hold 2 of the party's first 3 nominating contests. Alexandria's Restaurant Week wraps up this weekend.
This year we have nearly 80 restaurants participating. They'll be offering either a $25, $35, or $45 per person prefix dinner.
Rebecca Dozier, communications director with Visit Alexandria, says it's a good time to try new restaurants.
It's really a wonderful opportunity for folks to explore restaurants throughout the city, so not just in Old Town. Alexandria's other neighborhoods, including Del Rey, Carlisle, and Eisenhower in the West End.
Noting many restaurants continue to offer outdoor heated dining options. Barbara Britt, WMAL and WMAL.com.
WMAL Sports. Tonight's the Wizards play the Pelicans, and Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes will start in tomorrow's AFC Championship game against the Bengals. Up next, traffic and weather on WMAL. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Virginia, on the Beltway, looked at the cameras. No issues on the inner loop or on the outer loop. You're at the posted speed limit. Same thing on 66 in Fairfax County. You're not tapping the brakes on the eastbound side or on the westbound side. Now to 95 in Virginia. Between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, you're at the posted speed limit in both directions. In D.C., 295, 395, and 695, I don't have any reports of anything slowing you down. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A chilly start this afternoon. Expect 55 to 56 for an afternoon high. Sunshine. Tomorrow we're looking at clouds to start and rain showers for your afternoon. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
Right now, 36 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday morning update.
The Saturday morning update continues. It's hour 2. That means John Gizzi is with us, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Back from sunny California. John, how are you?
Well, a little more canned and a little bit exhausted after covering the knockdown, drag-out race for national chairman that ended with incumbent chairman Ronna McDaniel securing a fourth term, something unprecedented in modern RNC history, and doing so by a comfortable margin.
What was the general tone after that election? Because Hamid Dylan had challenged her and had been pretty gracious in her challenge, but at the same time had been pretty firm. Did they seem to sort of unite in any way, or is there still a lot of fractioning in the party?
There's unity after the election for chairman, and I've covered highly contested races for Republican national chairman since the winter meeting of 1993. This one got a little more full of invective in the sense that Harmeet Dillon charged that Ronna McDaniel was spending too much as chairman, that she had a lucrative expense account, sometimes traveled by private jet, and even charged her hairdresser on the official party expenses. Now, having said that, none of this is a crime, and it's not as though she did it every other week. Many members say they had no problem with how she spends money because she's raised so much for the party. In states such as my home state of Connecticut and Utah and the District of Columbia, said that Chairman McDaniel was always calling to find out how things were. Harmeet Dillon is a high-powered litigator in San Francisco, a fixture on cable television, including Newsmax, and somebody who has represented Donald Trump in court and represented Arizona's gubernatorial loser, Kari Lake. She spoke at an event for Ms. Dillon on Wednesday night. Now, what's interesting is that neither McDaniel nor Dillon says a harsh word about Donald Trump, and both claim the backing of supporters of the former president. Overall, the Republican Party is not your father's party. Rich Republicans are still there, but they tend to be more conservative and say they are on the Trump train. What does this mean for next time? Well, it means that they're not going to stand for criticism of Donald Trump, but they would like to have Trump without the tweets as their next candidate. This is what members were telling me. Ronna McDaniel says she's neutral in the race, and that's how the party will go from here.
So you mentioned, obviously, 2024. What was the conversation? I mean, you got Ron DeSantis, you got Mike Pence, you got possibly Mike Pompeo getting in on it. Was there much talk about who may end up as a candidate?
Let's put it on the table. The only serious discussion was about two candidates, Donald Trump and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who did a last-minute film praising Harmeet Dillon for the criticism she raised about the party, but Team Dillon did not put that up on their website because they say it did not constitute an endorsement. In any event, Ron DeSantis has a lot of friends and admirers. People want him as a speaker in their states. There is no criticism of Donald Trump except for the fact he's been president already. They wished he had a second term, but he didn't, and it's time to move on with someone new. Now, there's a lot of admiration for former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and South Carolina Senator Tim Scott, who is yet to say whether he will run or not. As for former Vice President Mike Pence, no one discusses him.
Well, while we're on political news coming out of California, a couple of Democrats throwing their hat in the ring for the Senate race, but the current senator has not said whether she'll run again. So, some people starting the race a little early there.
Dianne Feinstein is the longest-serving senator from California, its first woman senator, and right now the oldest member of the U.S. Senate on the Democratic side at 86 years of age. I was in Los Angeles when she won her first statewide primary for the Senate back in 1992. She had a couple of scares at the beginning of her career in the Senate, but Since then, she's virtually been able to mail in her re-elections. Not so now. Adam Schiff, former House Intelligence Committee chairman, is in the race already. Katie Porter, congresswoman from Southern California, a power on social media, has gotten in the race as well. They're both officially announced. Meanwhile, Ro Khanna, yet another California congressman and a Bernie Sanders Democrat, is almost in the race. And Barbara Lee, who started her career as a member of the Black Panthers and is now in Congress, is in the contest. It's a star-studded race and one that is sure to attract national attention, with four Democratic House members, all from disparate factions of the party. I might add, there's no mention of Dianne Feinstein when they discuss the coming primary in the Golden State.
You mentioned Adam Schiff. Of course, he now the former head of the Intelligence Committee in the House after the elections, but he's also now a former member of the House Intelligence Committee, period.
Yes, he certainly is. And indeed, Speaker Kevin McCarthy, himself a Californian, has blocked not only Schiff, but Eric Swalwell, a fellow Democrat from the Golden State, from serving on the Intelligence Committee. With Schiff, McCarthy and other Republicans believed he abused his position in trying to establish a link between Russia and the Trump campaign of 2016. Something I might add that Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller finally ended up rejecting. And as for Eric Swalwell, it's very simple. No one likes to put it this way, but he slept with a Chinese agent at one point. There is no way that Republicans would let him anywhere near intelligence. So you have this clash, and it's one that's going to be continually brought up. And if Democrats win the House again, watch them seek some kind of revenge on Republicans. That's what the nature is of Capitol Hill these days.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. As always, John, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Rick. And now it's back from California and back to work.
717, Saturday morning update, WMAL. Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning. We'll talk to Cheryl Atkinson.
On the Maryland side of the Beltway, I looked at the traffic cameras. In a loop and out a loop in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County, you're not hitting the brakes. There is nothing in the road slowing you down. In Prince George's County, on the BW Parkway and 95, between the two beltways, you're at speed in both directions. In Montgomery County, on 270, between the Beltway and Frederick, you're at the posted speed limit on the northbound side and on the southbound side. And if you're going to the airports this morning, BWI, National, or Dulles, roads leading to the terminals are clear of any delays. And now, from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Tracking that Saturday forecast, a chilly start, temperatures in the 30s, but we quickly jump into the 40s around 8 o'clock. Lunchtime, we're looking at 50 degrees, and this afternoon, expect 55 to 56 for an afternoon high. Combined with sunshine and some light winds, a beautiful Saturday afternoon. Tomorrow, we're looking at clouds to start and rain showers for your afternoon. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
34 degrees, 718, the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler, and Cheryl Atkinson is with us each week. She is the host of Full Measure. You can catch that on ABC7 tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. Also airs throughout the day on News Channel 8. Cheryl, good morning.
Good morning.
COVID vaccine mandates have been a controversial topic on many levels, and a lot of questions about the efficacy of preventing the transmission or actually preventing the illness itself. And you go right to the source and kind of delve into it. Tell us who you spoke to and what they said.
Well, this is, I think, a very unusual interview because a lot of people spoke out against the mandates at the time, but not so many doctors. You may have heard from nurses and some other medical professionals, but the doctors kind of kept their mouths shut. And there's a lot of reasons for that, I think. But I've, this week on Full Measure, I'm interviewing doctors and nurses from the first hospital that required COVID vaccines. They have a lot of theories about why their hospital, Houston Methodist, wanted to be on the front end of all of this, kind of to pave the path for others to follow suit. But the point is, they're speaking out against it. All of the people that I speak to in this group interview ended their association because they were forced to or voluntarily into their association with the hospital because they did not want to get the vaccine. They explain why. They think the mandates, they say, are completely unscientific and that the policies were capriciously applied when it came to exemptions, such as religious exemptions. It's a fascinating story. But, Rick, I think one of the most interesting things they talk about is sort of what doctors expect in terms of freedom to make rational medical decisions on behalf of their patients and independence. And they say in the big picture, these COVID policies in some instances are going to hurt the way everything operates for the safety of patients. If doctors can't follow what they think is sound medical advice or voice their opinions. So I think it's a really can't miss interview in full measure.
Well, we saw the mandates, and then we saw a number of people lose their jobs if they failed to follow the mandate. And tell us a little bit of the follow-up on that.
Well, you know, there really is a lot of turnaround. I guess maybe now as more data is becoming clear and some cases are going to court, we talked about this would happen, people are being ordered back to their jobs in some places, or places are being ordered to allow people back in their jobs. In Italy, because there are hospital shortages really in many countries, the United States is one of them. In Italy, they're inviting back the healthcare workers who were fired because of the mandates. In New York City, the city workers who were fired because of the mandates, the courts ordered them to be hired back with back pay. What's the city doing? They're appealing. But these battles are still going on. The military finally was forced to do away with its vaccine mandate, which made no sense to, you know, scientific minds, because young, healthy people, they don't die of COVID in general, and vaccine has side effects, and it doesn't prevent transmission or illness or infection. So, you know, I think a lot's coming home to roost and will be sorting itself out in the coming couple of years.
Speaking of coming home to roost, if we look at Twitter these days, Elon Musk has taken over, and a lot of information, things we thought may be going on, apparently were going on. And you really take a deep dive into the Twitter documents and the whole story, and tell us what you find.
You know, when these documents were released, they were done on Twitter in what they call threads, like a series of posts that for maybe some people were a little bit hard to put together and to follow and to dig through. So what I did was I took the time to go through all the documents that have come out so far and some additional things, some related material that's come out through a lawsuit that's separate. And what I was really looking for in particular was focusing on what the documents tell us about the government's role, because I have argued that it is censorship, even though the government is working through a private company to censor views and information. It is official censorship. It's a violation of the Constitution. You can't just use a proxy like Twitter and say, well, it's not really the government doing it, because it is. And I think the documents prove that. So I'll be looking at specifically what it tells us about the FBI's role and the Biden White House role. I mean, the FBI, to me, this is sort of an unconscionably inappropriate role for our intelligence, one of our intelligence agencies to take when you see the meetings that they had. It's almost like Twitter was a satellite office for the FBI. I think people will be interested to see what I found when I looked through these files.
We hear a lot of names surface in some of the document releases, and one of them is James Baker. And he's made a very interesting career move, and I think that says something.
Well, he was forced out of the FBI, really. He was the general counsel there during all these controversies when they were targeting Donald Trump. He was accused of some important anti-Donald Trump leaks. He was referred for potential prosecution, although he was ultimately never charged with anything. But he was kind of forced out for all these reasons. Where does he go? Twitter hires him as counsel. And there he continues his anti-Trump and censorship efforts now. You know, it's just sort of the revolving door. He's gone from the FBI to Twitter, where he works directly, and you'll see some of that in the documents as well. By the way, though, he was ultimately fired once his name surfaced in these things. Elon Musk was pretty quick with letting him go from his job.
It's all tomorrow morning, ABC 7, 10 o'clock, full measure. Cheryl, thank you so much.
Thank you.
7:25 Saturday morning update on WMAL. We've got Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer coming up. Also, we'll talk to KT McFarland. Everything you always wanted to know about classified documents on the way. 7:28, it is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. You have heard that classified documents found at Mar-a-Lago, found in Wilmington at President Biden's residence and other locations, and now, of course, at former Vice President Mike Pence's home in Indiana. Mike Pence, instead of stonewalling and dodging it, he hit it head on yesterday. He was at Florida International University. He was speaking in Miami. He also talked to a reporter, and here's how the vice president addressed it.
Mistakes were made, but I take full responsibility for it, and I've directed my counsel to work with the Department of Justice, with the archives, and with the Congress on a full investigation, and we're cooperating in that as we speak. I hope when the American people look at the way that we responded, when we discovered the presence of these classified documents among my personal papers in my Indiana home, they'll see that we reacted above politics and we put the national interest first.
Wow, pretty impressive compared to how other people have handled it. 7:29 Saturday morning update. Heather Curtis has the 7:30 news. Then we're back with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. Americans watched videos of the police killing of Tyre Nichols during a traffic stop this month. The disturbing footage from four cameras shows police pull the 29-year-old black man out of his car, tase him, pepper spray him, hold him down, and beat him. You can hear him call out for his mother during the attack. The videos were released a day after the five black men, now former officers, were charged with murder. They're all out on bond this morning. That video prompting protesters to take to the streets in many American cities, including here in D.C.
Protesting is okay. Don't tell y'all I don't protest, but I'm tired of being in the streets. And the street's not going to bring these families justice. It brings attention. So me coming out here brought attention, but the work continues.
The opioid overdose reversal drug Narcan's been used 11 times this year in Montgomery County Public Schools. Last year, overdoses in the county increased among young people by 78%. Today, parents can learn about the spike and how to administer Narcan at a community forum. Substance Abuse Prevention Committee Chair for the county's Council of PTAs, Laura Mitchell, says Narcan's simple and safe to use.
You don't know whose life you might save or what they might go on to do.
The forum runs from 9:30 to 11:30 at Clarksburg High School. WMAL Sports, tonight's the Wizards play the Pelicans. Traffic and weather next on WMAL. Here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Currently in D.C., 295, 395, and 695. No crashes or construction slowing you down. Now on the Virginia side of the Beltway, I looked at the cameras, both on the inner loop and on the outer loop. Didn't see any crashes, and I don't have any reports of any construction being set up. You should be at the posted speed limit. On 66 in Fairfax County, no delays on the eastbound side or on the westbound side. And on 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, lanes are at the posted speed limit on the northbound side and on the southbound side. And now, from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Chilly start this afternoon. Expect 55 to 56 for an afternoon high. Sunshine. Tomorrow we're looking at clouds to start and rain showers for your afternoon. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
37 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
Join me, Chris Plant, and other great WMAL listeners this June on our Mediterranean Sea Cruise. Visit ChrisPlantCruise.com.
It is the Saturday morning update. We're at 7:36. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, the author of Operation Darkheart, co-host of the Thought to Action podcast. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to be here.
All right, lots of talk, obviously, about the documents, but one person that's not talking is Corinne Jean-Pierre, the White House press secretary. She's been dodging that one now for weeks. Interesting story in CNN that you pointed out to me as we were preparing for this. The CNN senior legal affairs correspondent is Paula Reed. She reported, quote, on Wednesday that officials within the Department of Justice are unhappy with President Biden and his team. She says, quote, some justice officials have been frustrated at times by certain decisions the Biden team has made. For example, weeks after the Justice Department told the Biden team they would be reviewing this case, the president's team searched the Wilmington home and didn't tell the Justice Department until after they found the classified material.
The Biden White House, the Biden team, the whole criminal family is trying right now to protect what's happening. I don't believe for a minute, as we said last week, Rick, that these documents have just been laying around. I think they've been out there for a long time. I think it was convenient that things were left in the closet at the Biden Center, Penn Biden Center, just to get this whole thing going. I think there's more of an intrigue going on than has been acknowledged. But the point is, that even the mainstream media is recognizing this is kind of serious and something has to be done. The appointment of the special counsel was not to get to the bottom of this. It was to isolate and try to maintain a complete firewall from the Hunter Biden events, which I would argue anyone with half a brain can look at the situation and recognize there's a complete correlation with causation, that the causation being Hunter Biden going out, getting all these great deals based on Joe Biden's access as vice president, and then Joe Biden himself benefiting. So that's why you see this pretense of a special counsel trying to get to the bottom of this. At the same time, they're trying their best to keep them apart. And I think they're trying to get Biden to acknowledge that maybe this is too serious for him to continue as president, or at least not run for president for a second term. But that's what's really going on. And even the mainstream media is now joining the anti-Biden group little by little, and I think that's what the larger Democrat Party is trying to accomplish right now.
All right, I want to turn to the announcement this week that the U.S. would be sending the Abrams tanks to Ukraine. 31 tanks will be on the way, and this is not a vehicle that you just kind of jump into and turn the ignition on and you know what you're doing. It takes training, and they say it's going to take months before the tanks actually are in service there.
Yeah, Victoria Nuland admitted yesterday, I think, in the media that who's the Assistant Secretary of State, who's the real honcho of this going back to the color revolution of 2014. These things that we're going to give them are going to be M1A2s, which are, you know, the top of the current line, but we're not going to give them our top-of-the-line armor, which apparently contains depleted uranium, and how we do that is a super secret, and I agree with not giving it to the Ukrainians, because these things are going to inevitably end up in some form in the hands of the Russians. And the second factor, this comes on top of Mark Milley himself, just a little over a week ago, admitting that there's over 100,000 casualties in the Ukrainian military, which was as being underreported, and with no clear idea of how, without manpower, Ukrainians are going to be able to stop the coming offensive from the Russians. And let's be clear here, to your point, Rick, these are high tech. These things have airplane engines, turbines. They're very hard to maintain. They're very thirsty. 31 of these things couldn't defend Toledo, for goodness sake. And the idea that somehow these are going to be the game changer when they're not even going to be there till probably after the Russian offensive starts is insane. The Germans are sending 88 Leopard 2s, a little bit better tank in that they're diesel. They're as high tech, but again, the logistics chain is a lot less because they're all in Europe. And even 88 is not going to stand up as the deciding factor to stop three Russian armies, which are now gathering in the Donbass and adjoining regions around Ukraine. So my frustration, and this is not pro-Russian, is that if you're going to do this, you need to do this in numbers that would actually make a difference. Rick, any given day, we have 2,000 Abrams in our units ready to go with another 3,000 in reserve. That's an army. That's what it takes to actually be decisive. 31 is a joke, and I think people should recognize what's going on here. This is much like LBJ, 1965, Vietnam, running, having rice paddy maps in his office, trying to run the war based on politics, not on strategy. And that's where we're at right now.
Well, speaking of war and strategy, headline at NBC News, Air Force General predicts war with China in 2025, tells officers to prep by firing a clip at a target and aim for the head. Tell us about the comments of General Mike Minahan.
Well, it's interesting. He's actually an Air Force guy, kind of smart on this, because, yeah, the Chinese have actually invested in some fairly significant body armor designed to defeat the rounds that we currently have in our weapons. We are switching over to a better round, a 6.8-millimeter round, 6 hours, matter of fact, making the spear. I think they changed it to the M9 now as the next rifle, which is better defeating body armor. But, yes, the Chinese have figured out how to kind of equip themselves for that. And the comments are apt by the fact that I think the largest challenger we have and the most likely adversary we'll face will be China within the next 10 years. China is growing more and more bellicose. They're actually building units, marine units, which would be amphibious and able to conduct an effective invasion of Taiwan. So I think it's correct. I think if you're looking at real threats we should be focused on, China is something we still should be looking at as one of our priorities.
Looking down the road, Tony, we're hearing all about artificial intelligence. We hear every day about robots and robotics. And what is war in 10 years look like? I mean, is this going to be whoever's got the you know, robot with the most armor? I mean, what's it going to look like down the road? It's scary.
Well, we're seeing it play out partly in Ukraine right now. We're talking about drones. We're talking about unmanned systems. We're talking about hypersonic missiles, which you and I have spoken about a lot over the past couple of years. It's going to be different. And often we have generals, I would argue that they're doing it now, fighting the last war, trying to figure out a way to win Afghanistan and Iraq, while we should be looking at a major confrontation of a near-peer power. And unfortunately, the very thing you said about AI and all these other things are not being as embraced as much and as quickly as they should be regarding having the right system being able to react at the appropriate time with lethal force. And I think we're going to be behind this, because I think the Russians are learning a lot about this quickly. The Chinese are figuring out from watching the Russians how to do things. And we have to be on top of this if we're going to actually prevail in any upcoming battle. And it's going to be different. It's going to be a lot more sci-fi, directed energy weapons, drones, nanotechnology, things that are small enough to literally be in a pocket and kill somebody. There's a lot of changes coming, and I'm not sure if we're ready for them.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, Thought to Action podcast, and what is the topic that's headlining this weekend?
So we're going to be talking about a number of constitutional issues relating to some of the overreach. Some of you guys have heard about the ATF decision to try to say that pieces of plastic are somehow dangerous because they sit on a gun at a certain place. So we'll be talking about that in the very near future.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, you'll find the podcast at londoncenter.org. Tony, as always, thank you very much.
Sure. Thanks, Rick.
All righty. We're at 7:45. This is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. We're going to talk to KT McFarland next, but first, LPDs in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Maryland on the Beltway, looked at the cameras, inner loop and outer loop in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County. Great news. You're not hitting your brakes. Lanes are clear. In Montgomery County on 270, between the Beltway and Frederick, no delays north and south. Now, back into Prince George's County. If you're traveling between the two Beltways on the BW Parkway and 95, you're at speed. Also in Prince George's County on Route 50, no delays between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, eastbound and westbound. And now, from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL StormWatch 7 forecast.
Tracking that Saturday forecast, a chilly start, temperatures in the 30s, but we quickly jump into the 40s around 8 o'clock. Lunchtime, we're looking at 50 degrees, and this afternoon, expect 55 to 56 for an afternoon high. Combined with sunshine and some light winds, a beautiful Saturday afternoon. Tomorrow, we're looking at clouds to start and rain showers for your afternoon. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
35 degrees, 7:46, the Saturday Morning Update.
Join Vince Colonnais February 7th for the all-new Steak of the Union at Bourbon Boulevard in Chantilly. Details at WMAL.com/steak.
7:48. This is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. It's always an honor to welcome K.T. McFarland onto the program, President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor, a board member of the American Conservative Union, and the author of the best-selling book, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. K.T., good morning.
Good morning.
I have two questions for you, K.T., from your unique perspective, not only at the White House, but your tenure at the Pentagon. Two questions. Number one, what is your responsibility when you leave a position in the government and you've been around sensitive documents? And number two, would love for you to give us a Documents 101 course so that we understand the varying degrees of classification and, you know, whether there's a classified document for the McDonald's lunch order or whether it's nuclear secrets.
Okay. Well, first of all, it's probably the when you leave government and you've had security clearances, it's probably the only thing that you cannot have an aide do on your behalf. You yourself actually have to go through the briefing of do you possess any classified information, and you sign lots of different documents of, for example, anything that you write, if you want to write your memoirs, you have to submit it to your the agency that you're leaving so they can check every word to make sure it's not classified information. You attest to the fact that you are taking no classified documents with you. You attest to the fact that you are giving back all of your cell phones and laptops and tablets and are not taking any copies of anything with you. I mean, it's a really serious, sobering experience to go through that. So you should be taking it seriously. I mean, I'm probably the only person in the history of government who played by the rules. I didn't take anything with me, no diaries, no phone logs, no transcripts, no notes, just what was in my head. I turned it all over as a part of the official offboarding process. I know other people that I worked with, and I know other people that I've worked with in the last 40, 50 years. They have kept duplicate copies of the stuff for their memoirs, maybe not classified information, but duplicate copies of, you know, files of their correspondence, et cetera. But the other thing is, when people walk away from government and when they say, well, I'm signing all these documents, I'm not going to take anything classified with me, how do we know? I mean, you don't know. There's nobody comes and searches your house when you leave as national security advisor. So, sure, people could have taken copies of that stuff home. And unless you raid the homes of all of them, you'll never know. So the whole thing really does rely on a certain element of trust and assuming that people sign legal documents that they are going to be telling the truth. But let's do classified documents 101. So what gets classified? Well, first of all, anything from any intelligence agency is classified, including, let's say you're going to have a meeting with a foreign leader and you get a profile analysis of that foreign leader. Now, maybe the stuff is taken from public sources. Anyway, that document is very highly classified. What if there's anything that's really analysis is classified, even if it's stuff that's come, the source of it might be just, you know, Council on Foreign Relations journals. And a lot of that stuff that's classified can be found in the unclassified world. I always thought the stuff in the unclassified world that is coming out of the think tanks and reporting and the academic experts, I always thought it was of much better quality. But because it's written by an intelligence official, FBI, CIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, et cetera, it's automatically classified. Now, that, to me, is the overclassified stuff. At the other end of the classification spectrum are the nuclear secrets, the weapons designs that you certainly don't want adversaries to have any idea that what those weapons designs are. And that you definitely want to keep out of the hands of the bad guys. That deserves to be classified. But then there's that whole middle area, which is kind of what I call the dirt that spies gather. It's gossip from foreign sources about somebody who's close to a leader. Some of it's verified, some of it's not. But let's, for example, say there's an article that says, well, according to sources close to Putin, he's got a mistress, he's got a love child, he's got a huge Swiss bank account. Now, that would be highly classified. But who knows if it's legitimate or not legitimate. It's really kind of gossipy stuff. And it's not like military secrets. But it's classified because of the way it's got, not because of the information it contains as much as how the information was gathered. And then there's another category, which is anything coming from electronics. So satellite imagery, digital interceptions, all that stuff's classified. Now, there are any conversation between leaders, say the president of the United States and the president of Mexico. they may be just discussing the weather and their grandchildren, but that's still classified, highly classified. They also may be discussing their response to the Ukraine war. You don't know because the whole thing is classified. As I said, any briefing books are classified. But you know something that always gets me, Rick, is that the president's daily schedule is classified. A low level of classification, confidential, but it's still classified. And, you know, is that something that really needs to be classified? And once something is classified, it's almost impossible to declassify it. With secret, top secret, confidential, whatever, there's usually a time period. So 25 years later, it's automatically declassified. But for a lot of the stuff, there's just once it's classified, it's gone. It's classified. You can never see it again in a public source. The president can declassify documents, including the highly secret stuff that I mentioned that comes from satellite imagery. And we've done it in a number of cases for national security. When I was in the Reagan administration, President Reagan made the decision to send American troops into Grenada, a Caribbean island, to rescue American students who were there. We weren't sure if they were hostages, but we had no contact with them. But also because there had been a coup in the government and the new government was creating runways and building an infrastructure to prepare what we thought would be a Soviet-Cuban base of operations in the Caribbean. Scary stuff. So Reagan decided to declassify the satellite imagery so the American people could see what the president was seeing and make the decision, as the president did, was, look, it looks like the Soviets or Cubans are making a military base here to threaten the United States. We want to preempt that. As to what these guys kept, it's just sheer speculation. And the leaks that you see, well, Donald Trump kept nuclear codes. I mean, come on. Donald Trump, when I briefed him every day, he didn't really care about the classified stuff. What he cared about more was sometimes the gossip or the personality profiles. So let's assume that Trump, some of the stuff Trump kept. Well, maybe he kept Kim Jong-un's handwritten letter to him. Remember the one that President Trump was always saying, oh, I got a love letter from Little Rocket Man. Yeah. You know, copies of those documents were kept. Clearly they were kept somewhere in the files. But did Trump take the original? Maybe. There's nothing that gets to a president's desk or leaves his desk without a copy being made. So the copies of this stuff everywhere. I can see Trump wanting the original. I mean, it was a personal letter to him. It's novelty value to show it off. When we were first in the Trump administration, he would take people upstairs to the bedrooms. You know, they'd sort of immediate staff or people he wanted to impress. And he would show them handwritten letters from previous presidents. You know, Lincoln sat here. Here's the first copy of that. And it was sort of like, oh, hey, wow, look at this. Gee gosh. So would he have kept stuff like that? That's probably what Trump kept. In addition to that, all the FBI and everybody in Washington making a hullabaloo about Trump and what did he have and were there security secrets. Remember, his Mar-a-Lago estate, which is the only place stuff was at, was guarded by FBI agents. I mean, sorry, Secret Service agents. So it wasn't people coming in and out. What did Biden take? I mean, who knows? Was it sloppiness? Maybe. But was there something else going on? I mean, the Biden Penn Center was paid for by China. Many of the senior fellows who were getting a paycheck from there, they had been national security officials in the Obama administration, and then they went into the Biden administration. Their salaries were paid in part by China. Well, did that give China special access to that building, to these individuals? What were the Chinese doing? I mean, there's a very nefarious, potentially nefarious connection there with China, Biden officials, documents, and then we all know the Hunter Biden-China connection. But this is all speculation. And frankly, people outside of the Beltway, they could care less. So if anybody wants to reestablish some integrity of these intelligence agents or these senior officials, how about sunlight is the best disinfectant? Those leaked stories from the FBI about all the dangerous things Trump kept and all the innocent things that Biden kept, well, well, that's just typical bureaucratic skullduggery.
Summarize it for us, kind of, you know, just the summary. The real story.
Okay, so my takeaway from all this, the real story here is not what they kept and why, but it's that the bureaucracy seems to be in charge. They're the real government, not the elected officials. They charge who to go after, who to press charges against, who's done wrong, who's done right, who leaks to what. I think that the bigger story here is that the federal government, the bureaucracy, which is taking increasing amounts of money and personnel and sucks it out of the productive economy, is the real story, that it's the growth of this giant government state that's in every aspect of our lives, including what the President of the United States and former President of the United States keep under the mattress.
Well, I promised earlier in the show that you would tell us everything we needed to know about classified documents, and you made good on our promise, KT. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick.
That is KT McFarland, of course, and you can find out a lot more about her experiences and everything in the White House in her bestseller, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's it for the Saturday morning update. Garden Sense this afternoon at 1. Thanks for being with us this morning.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News.